Hello, everyone out there in podcast world. We are back with another episode of Between the Reels. This is Casey.
And this is Devin.
And we are here to bring you the movie news, reviews, and take a step back into the vault.
And this week we actually have a lot of news, as well as especially we'll be talking about the big explosion that's been the Star Wars news and different things like that. But before we get to that, I actually like to share some news. Just real quick things this week before we get into our Star Wars discussion. So I'm going to just breeze through this real quick. First off, I know we talked about Ghostbusters 3 and how it's going to start filming this summer. Well, surprise, surprise, it's been delayed yet again. Sony is a little not as optimistic or little has some reservations about this, so they're kind of pulling back funding for right now, which makes obvious sense since Bill Murray's not going to be in it. And again, if you don't have Bill Murray, why even make Ghostbusters? I mean, every person is clutching that. And I'd say the same thing if you didn't have Dan Aykroyd or any other people. They all need to be there. They're all key players.
Exactly. So breathe a sigh of relief, all of you Ghostbuster fans out there.
Yeah, because right now there's not been a single reboot that has been as good as the originals.
No.
So now we got into Captain America 2 news. Just to be real quick, Kobe Smulders, who basically played,
Maria Hill in The Avengers.
That's right. Basically, Nick Fury's right-hand woman. She's set to return in Captain America 2. We also we talked last week about Crossbones, and Frank Grillo, how that was rumored. Well, it's set in stone. He is verified. He is going to be in Captain America 2, along with, of course, Bucky, Winter Soldier. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out, if there'll be too many villains or how that'll play out. We also know that Captain America's leading lady, announcing who's Sharon Carter. Basically, the person who's been up front right now is basically Jessica Brown Finley, who is a British actress, and she's from Downton Abbey.
Yep.
I've not been watching that show as closely. Casey, I guess, has been following that show a lot more. So
I have a wife who's a big fan, and therefore I am a big fan. great show. She does an excellent job. So there's nothing but high hopes. And she's British, so.
Yeah, I think it's a good casting call. And so Downton Abbey, I mean, so my wife's also a big fan, but I've not. I know, I really need to watch that show. But my wife's an avid fan, and just from the little bits when I've sat down and watched it with her, I think she does a great job. So I think that'd be a great casting call. And some more news as well, just obsessed with the superhero thing. We also found out that Jamie Foxx is in talks to play the villain of Electro in Spider-Man 2. I know that film. At the end of Spider-Man 1, people speculated because, the guy talks to, the Lizard Professor.
Yeah, lots of people had ideas of who it was.
Harry Osborn, and so
few people have thought maybe the Electro because of all the lightning and stuff in the background, the fact that he appears and disappears.
But it's going to be weird because the guy has such a unique voice when he visits him. Jamie Foxx doesn't really sound like Jamie Foxx. So.
No.
I know there's also issues. People are like, well, Electro's a white character and Jamie Foxx is black. Again,
I think we're past that.
Yeah, that doesn't really matter. I guess it's funny because if a white man plays a character of another ethnicity, Johnny Depp in Tonto, The Lone Ranger, no one really – it's totally fine. But if a black man plays a white man – up in arms. So, I think we're past that. Again, the part of movies is even if we hold to the roots, we still can make these different changes.
Well, that's the great thing about comic book movies as well, I think, is the fans are a lot more forgiving in that regard. Whereas as long as they're true to the character, race and stuff like that doesn't really matter.
But again, I was just thinking, though, let's say if Bruce Wayne was played by Will Smith, I mean...
That would be bad for a lot of the reasons because he's black.
Yeah, but I guess, it would be interesting if something like that happened. And even myself as an avid Batman fan, or let's say Superman was played by, I know Grant Morrison in the comics had Superman be president, basically kind of an homage to Barack Obama in a different universe.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are kind of weirded out by that. But it is interesting because right now I think because he's a villain, we can kind of throw that off for a secondary character. But the main character... Something to think about. So, but I won't want to delve too much on that. Real quick as well, the Shield TV, it's been leaked that the Shield TV series will start filming in the next couple months, I think in January. And Joss Whedon is set to direct the first episode, which great start off again. Joss Whedon with Buffy the Vampire Slayer as well as Firefly.
Dollhouse.
Yeah, he's got a great style with directing. And so I think the fact that he's going to do this back to the TV show, back to his roots, I think will be really good. Lastly, Luther season 3 has just been announced by BBC. They have a nice little trailer for that. I'm extremely excited about this because Luther is one of my favorite shows of all time.
Yes, if you're not watching Luther, it's on Netflix. You have no excuse not to. Fantastic show.
Yeah.
You won't be disappointed. The seasons are short, so you can go through it real quick.
Like, there's 4 episodes in season 1, 6 in season 2, each 15 minutes long.
Exactly. It's an easy watch, yet a hard watch at the same time.
Yeah, it's not one where you can, after each episode, you kind of have to wait a day because it's so heavy.
But it's fantastic, and you will get such a huge appreciation for Idris Elba that you'll want him to be in every role that is out there.
Yeah, so like with James Bond, totally set for that.
Yes.
I'm completely excited for the prospect of him playing James Bond.
Yes.
So, well, that's all I have for this week. What do you have, Casey? All
right. Again, we're just going to cruise through several of these. If you were a fan of television in the 90s, you've probably heard of the show Boy Meets World.
If you haven't, where have you been?
Exactly. I don't know if it's on Netflix. If it is,
I think it is. It might be on Netflix.
Watching it, it's worth looking for. You know, the first several seasons were great. Last couple, you know, fell off. But the news is brought out this week is they are planning on reviving the show as a sequel to the original. They're going to bring back Ben Savage and Danielle Fisher to play themselves as adults who now have a teenage daughter. And they're working with the title Girl Meets World.
Has the show been gone for that long, though, for them to have a teenage daughter?
Oh, it's been... You'd have to look it up. We'll do it right now while we're talking. But it's been probably late 90s, maybe early 2000s at the best. So
wow.
You put them...
12 years old, 13 years old.
Yeah, right there at the beginning of middle school. You've got to check, because if I remember correctly, she was pregnant toward the end of the series.
That's right. Yep.
It'll be interesting either way. So Disney Channel's doing it, so get excited or get depressed. depends on how you view it.
I'm excited.
This is next to a bit of comic book news. A Dame to Kill For, the sequel to Sin City by Robert Rodriguez, started filming. And we just got official confirmation that Jamie King will return as twins Goldie and Wendy. This is a semi-prequel to one of the major stories of A Dame to Kill For. Takes place previous to several of the events in the original Sin City. So she'll be reprising those roles that she had from Sin City, and they are bringing in actress Jamie Chung to replace Devin Aoki as Miho, one of the prostitutes of Old Town. If you don't know the Sin City comics, there's, I think, about 8 of them, mm-hmm. give or take. They're fun reads. I enjoyed them. I enjoyed the original Sin City movie, so I'm excited for these. The other bit of news that was tucked in this is that they still haven't officially announced two of the major characters, or the same major character, just who has reconstructive surgery part of the way through. So that'll be interesting to find out who's doing it and how they can get this all done without the major characters. Clive Owen played him in the original, so he could be back for the second half, but there's no official word. But who would play in the first half? Still up in the air.
Hmm.
And last but not least, if you're a fan of the comic book series Lock and Key, fantastic. It's a horror fantasy comic. I'm a big fan. Been reading it for, I guess it's years now.
Yeah, Casey's been trying to get me to get into it as well. I haven't done it yet, but
it
looks pretty cool.
It's a great thing. They're supposed to be wrapping up within the next little while. It's a limited run series. But they have just announced a possible, or I guess not possible, it's been confirmed, a trilogy out of the Lock and Key series that's going to be produced and written by Alex Kurtzman and Robert Orci, who from Star Trek, from Lost, from the upcoming, we talked about it before the podcast, Ender's Game.
Oh, yes.
Movie. So, talented guys, lots of hope there. It was officially confirmed by Robert Orci on Twitter. When a fan asked for confirmation or an update to please bring it, he laid it out. He just said that it was true. Didn't give any more detail than that, so more than that, we just don't know. Mm. But if you're a fan and you were disappointed that it, because it was supposed to be turned into a TV series, if you're disappointed it didn't get picked up, this could be the chance to make up for that.
But sometimes with horror films, I mean, I like it more when it is a movie sometimes than anime, because sometimes when it's a TV series, unless it's, you know, like Tales from the Dark, or
Tales from the Crypt.
Tales from the Crypt, or what's the one, Scary Stories, the one on Nick Snick.
Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Are You Afraid of the Dark, you know, where it's like little standalone segments or something like that, it's really cool, but generally if it's an overarching thing, it doesn't work for me.
No, I mean, really the only example would be American Horror Story on FX, which just started its second season. It's been the only real horror TV show to really carry through with any significant
power. Yeah, it's gotten great reviews and things like that, so...
Now, to help segue into our large Star Wars discussion, we are going to bring you a bit of information and a bit of rumor.
Mm-hmm.
It's officially confirmed that Bryan Singer is officially directing X-Men Days of Future Past after Matthew Vaughn dropped out. He will stay on to produce, but is no longer directing. So Bryan Singer, who's a fantastic director... we'll be picking up those reins to carry it out. Now, here is the bit of rumor that comes with that as to why Matthew Vaughn dropped out. There's been speculation, or there wasn't much speculation. There's no real reason given for why he dropped out. We know he's a little fickle. Mm-hmm. This isn't the first time he's done it.
Because he dropped out first class originally, then came back.
So it's not uncommon for him to do this. But the rumor on the street, and it's unconfirmed at this point, is that Matthew Vaughn is being courted and brought in to direct Star Wars Episode 7.
Oh, yes. And this is our nice segue into the huge news this past week that's been Star Wars. And just so the listeners know, I'm a huge Star Wars fan. I was part of the fan club as a teenager. I read all the comic books, you know, Dark Empire, Rogue Squadron, you know, the Jedi Knight things. I read the books. I had all the LucasArts video games, you know, from Rogue Squadron, Shadows of the Empire, Dark Forces, Rebel Assault, which is a classic. It was Jedi Knight.
Star Wars Battlefront.
Yeah.
Those were fantastic.
Amazing games. So I'll be honest, you know, when I'm a purist, I refuse to watch the special editions. I have the originals on DVD, the theatrical versions. That's the only ones I watch. You know, I'm not a big fan of the prequels. So when I first heard this news that Disney bought it, because that's the big news, is that George Lucas sold the rights to Lucasfilm and basically Star Wars. I think Indiana Jones might be involved with that as well, because Lucas Farms, and as well as other things, to Disney. And at first, I was devastated by this news. I don't know, how'd you react to it?
That was kind of the boat I was in. I was putting my baby to bed when my brother sent me the text message. I'm just like, what? So, minutes to say, the bedtime routine got cut short so I could go and climb on the computer and find out what all I'm missing. I was blown away and shocked in the news that right away they're announcing three new movies.
Yeah. 2015, you know, Star Wars Episode 7.
I was worried. I was terrified.
Yeah, and even still, you know, I was really mad, or not mad, I was really sad, and then I had some hope come up, and now I'm a little cautiously optimistic.
Because with the exception of Marvel, Disney's not known for being the most...
Pixar.
That's true. Except for Marvel and Pixar, they're not known for being the most kind with their properties.
Oh, and like Pirates of the Caribbean. I mean, first one was great, and then they realized their cash cow potential.
Let's
milk it for all it's worth. Or, you know, I mean, how many direct-to-video sequels they have of Aladdin and Beauty and the Beast.
Little Mermaid.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is Marvel and Pixar, what makes them so good is that fact that Disney just owns, like, basically the rights, but they do their own thing.
Letting them run it, letting them do it. Yeah. And they're bringing in money, so it's the best thing that they could do.
Yeah, and so maybe if Lucasfilm does that, because I know they have, I think Kathleen Kennedy is her name, who's going to be kind of overseeing it, and George Lucas is going to be the creative consultant.
Yes.
He's not going to write them. He's not going to direct them.
So everybody rejoice.
Yeah. He's basically going to let other people do it. And I think that's what makes me cautiously optimistic. But at the same time, these are going to be standalone films. They're not going to be tied. It sounds like they're not going to draw upon, because, you know, people want to say, oh, what about Admiral Thrawn or the Jedi Academy or whatnot? You know, what are these going to do to the continuity of the canon of the Star Wars universe? Because that's why I had a hard time with the prequels was, I mean, for so long you knew that Obi-Wan Kenobi and Anakin Skywalker had some epic battle in, you know, on volcanic rock, and that's how Darth Vader became Darth Vader. But when you see it play on the movie, there's still it still contradicted the original trilogy, because you had, you know, first off, Luke got his lightsaber because this just shows how much of a nerd I am. Luke got his lightsaber from Obi-Wan because Obi-Wan says, well, you know, your father wanted you to have it when you're old enough. Well, you didn't see that in the prequels at all because Darth Vader, I don't even know if he even knew that she had kids.
Right.
Because, you know, she was pregnant after become Darth Vader, or she gave birth after Darth Vader. So there's no way of, like, here's my lightsaber. And then you have Princess Leia Return of the Jedi, you know, oh, my mother, she died when I was really young, and I remember her. Well, how can you remember her when you're an infant just born?
Yeah.
And then she dies.
She died in childbirth.
Yeah. And so, you know, when you add the movie aspect of it, it didn't make the everything else not work at all. You know,
right.
it went against the grain of the canon that was established in the Star Wars universe. That's what my big fear is of 7 through 12, is it's going to go against the grain of what we've known.
What you've already said. Well, and that's where it's in good, in my opinion, where it has hope, is the fact that Star Wars at this point, at least as far as the movie continuity, you know, except for all this stuff, you know, that's on the past. So as long as it takes place after or X number of years in the future, it gives you, you don't know where it's going to that extent. Now, I mean, obviously, if you've read the books and you're a big fan, then you know where you want that to go.
You have JC and Jaden Skywalker, you have Anakin Skywalker as well, I think also comes to the dark side. Said I'm probably revealing way too much, but
but it's worth it.
Yeah.
But yeah, and since there's no official direction that they're going, everyone's speculating. Is it going to pull from the books? I guess George Lucas had original treatments.
Well, yeah, because he actually went to he actually spoke with Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher a year ago and telling him, I want to make a 7, 8, and 9 at least, and told them kind of the general story of it was.
And I guess there were even older treatments a little farther back where it would pick up where Luke was in his 30s to 40s and move on from that point, which at this point obviously wouldn't be possible unless you completely recast Luke.
Which, again, what do you do with that? I mean, that brings issues as well, at least for me.
So do you set it that much farther in the future and make Luke the Obi-Wan Kenobi character, passing it on to another generation?
I think that'd be great, is maybe have Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher, and I guess a bit of news, Harrison Ford has now said he's open to, which is interesting because I know he wanted Han Solo to die in Return of the Jedi, and he wasn't ever really a big fan of that character. He didn't really like that character as much as he loved playing Indiana Jones.
It's important to note that he did shoot first.
Yes. Wayne, number one, why I refuse to watch special editions. So the fact that he's saying he's open to it, I think is really interesting as well. I think he's probably realizing the potential of this. And I mean, if you have any sense of intelligence, any ego that you have will go into the bus to say, like, yes, I will be a part of this if I can. So I think maybe if they're 60 years old, maybe whether Luke and Leia, or, you know, Luke maybe has kids, or if Leia and Han have children, and hopefully draw upon the canon or whatnot or something, or maybe Luke starting a Jedi Academy and passing that buck on, I think would be really interesting.
Yeah, and really that's about the only, in my opinion, about the only direction you could go. You can tie them in so there's connection.
Yeah, because you have to have the Skywalker family.
Yes, but anything beyond that, I mean, if you're trying to tie them in as central characters, I don't know that they could carry another trilogy with these characters. You'd have to bring in something new, some fresh blood, which I can't imagine they're not going to do.
Yeah. Well, another thing as well, I talked to someone this past Sunday, and he thought an interesting aspect of maybe seven, you know, this new trilogy of just somewhere else in the universe, not involved with any of the essential characters at all, but just somewhere, a totally different thing, which that could also work as well, because then you don't have that issue of getting against the grain of the canon, the Star Wars canon.
The established.
Yeah, because you're not dealing with Luke and Leia's progeny, you're not dealing with some of the other aspects. You can still involve the Empire, maybe involve Jedi Knights or the Force or whatnot, instead of maybe have the person, or maybe come across Luke and Luke teach and says Obi-Wan figure, but it's starting a new family tradition and not tied to the Skywalker universe. So that I think you run the potential of not running into so many problems if you go that aspect.
How do you think the fans would react, kind of distancing itself from the originals?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I think you'd have a lot of uproar, personally, because, again, having Luke Skywalker and all that stuff. But at the same time, realistically, I think that's the best way to work. You can have those snippets, have that tie-in there, but maybe not have them be the focus. So I can see it going both ways. I mean, I think people are just so – I know a lot of people are so excited about this, but I know there are others, and myself included, are just kind of like, the more we mess with this universe, the less I like it. I mean, yeah. Like, the prequels really deadened my love for Star Wars.
Absolutely.
I still love the originals, but the fact that the prequels, every time I watch the originals now, I get so frustrated because when, you know, I hear those little ties to what happened in the past, you know, Clone Wars and all that stuff. It's like, well, that's not, now the prequels kind of ruined my imagination of what happened.
Right.
And they didn't make it better.
The lack of information was helpful. You can build your own universe.
Exactly.
From the information you give it.
So
one last question for you. Which one do you think would be worse? The uproar from fans if they kind of distance themselves from the continuity, or the uproar if they kind of stick with the continuity, bring in a new cast, and just completely botch up the project?
I don't know. And again, what do you mean by fans? Because there's so many different fans now. Because you True. Have fans of the originals. Then you have the younger generation who's fans of the prequels. Then you have the younger generation.
That's debatable.
Yeah. Well, like my nephews. I mean, they love the prequels. They don't care as much for the originals.
Which is a shame.
Yeah. And then you have the ones who don't even know about the prequels or the originals, but love the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's all these various fans. And so I think the only ones who are going to be the uproar are going to be like my fan base who love the originals. Or honestly, my fan base, but the fan base I'm a part of who love the original trilogy. I think if you're going to hear any uproar, it's going to be from them. But we're such a small minority now, I think.
Everyone's getting too old.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think that's the thing is Disney wants to make a whole new generation of fans. And they're going to do that. And that's the geniusness of what George Lucas has done is he spawned or created this huge fan base for generations of this product that no other people have ever done before in terms of a product.
And that's one of the things I give George Lucas credit for. I mean, in spite of all of his shortcomings, the fact that he says, I want this to continue. I want it to be, you know, generations to come.
Yeah.
I need to pass this on to a new generation of filmmakers and let them put their stamp on it and make it great. So, I mean, you got to give him respect for that he realizes his time with it, it's kind of passed. It's time to give it to the next generation and let them build it for them.
Yeah, I mean, he's really kind of did what Star Trek did. You know, you had original Star Trek, then you had the movies, then you had Star Trek The Next Generation, then you had the movies that kind of sprung from that, and now you've had this new thing with J.J. Abrams. I mean, Star Trek has continually evolved itself and made it relevant for future people. And I think George Lucas is doing that with Star Wars. And one thing I am excited about with Disney is at least we'll get a Star Wars Tomorrowland, maybe, at Disneyland or Disney, which I would love.
That's true.
And, you know, LucasArts, because I think that's the thing. Disney also has rights now to Industrial Light & Magic, Skywalker Sound, and I think LucasArts.
Yeah.
And so for the fact of now for LucasArts, because LucasArts was awesome in the 80s and 90s.
Yes.
One of the top gaming companies, and now it's just been fledgling. And it just really hasn't created great products in a long time. So I think for Disney now to invest all this money and pump into that, I think will give the Star Wars brand as well, not just the movies, but in the other avenues, and add a big boost.
Yeah, one of the things I read said that right now they're not going to focus a whole lot, at least not on console gaming. It'll be more of mobile gaming, iPad, iPods, that sort of thing.
Which I kind of want as well, because I play a lot of my games now is on my iPad and my iPhone.
Yeah, it's a broader base. I'm hoping, though, that they do pour some time and effort into a good, solid console game that hasn't been around. Star Wars-wise, since the original Force Unleashed, I thought was...
It was good, but it's still...
It wasn't as good as the 80s, or the 90s, when, you know, when it was in its heyday. But, it was decent. So if you can pour some money in and bring that back, I think it would be
making a new game. I can't remember exactly what it's called, but it's basically like a Drake Fortune.
Really?
Type thing. Because then in Star Wars, you're a bounty hunter, you're going to the underworld of Coruscant, and it looks incredible. So I think hopefully this will be the start of everything else. I think the other interesting thing, though, as well, before we move on, is I know a lot of people are hoping that because Disney is such a cash cow, that this will allow the original trilogy to be released on Blu-ray.
Yes.
The only hiccup is 20th Century Fox still owns the rights to A New Hope. But again, I mean, if they're in it for the money as well, I assume they would probably work something out with Disney to get this. Because that's what everyone wants is we want the original trilogy in HD.
Yes.
You know, in Blu-ray or something like that. Because in special edition, it's so horrible to watch these, you know, CGI things mixed with these clay, you know, or these models.
Practical
effects. It doesn't work.
No.
And they look so dated now.
Exactly. I mean, it's not even the, like, new and good-looking CGI. It's the horrible, you know, early 2000s, 90s CGI. Where,
yeah, 1997. You know, the special edition version that came out.
Exactly. I mean, the type of stuff you could make in your home computer with Windows 95. I mean, yeah. It's not good.
Yeah. And so at the time, it was incredible, but we've moved on since then. And that's the problem with the prequels as well, is they're so CGI that now it looks fake and cartoony. So especially when you put up against with the Blu-ray and whatnot. So
yeah, you lose a lot of the magic.
Yeah. So I think that's my biggest hope, is by this move, we can get the original theatrical versions of the trilogy, the Star Wars trilogy, on Blu-ray, because that's what I want to show my kids, is not the special edition, not Greedo shooting first, not Darth Vader going, no, which is my reaction when this news first came out, but is the original trilogy. So if that is all what this deal brought about, then I would be happy. So right now, I'm cautiously optimistic, but I guess I can't say anything until we see the movie comes out. Yeah. And what their stance are. But I think Matthew Vaughn is a great step in the right direction, if that's true.
I agree 100%.
So,
well, ladies and gentlemen, that is our movie news section. We hope you enjoyed it. Thank you for listening to our diatribe about Star Wars. And we're going to take you into our reviews of Wreck-It Ralph, as well as a follow-up review, the CW TV show Arrow.
All right, welcome to our movie review. As I said, we were talking about Wreck-It Ralph, and now what happened was we wanted Darren from Between the Bubbles actually saw this movie, and we wanted him to review it, but with our schedules, especially between Casey and mine, we weren't able to work out. So Darren actually sent me kind of his review of it, and basically, you know, again, what this movie is basically about, it's about a cartoon character or a video game character, Wreck-It Ralph, who's in this video game.
Villain, I guess.
Yeah, video game villain. And he doesn't like being labeled as that. He wants to move on and do something else. It's very much a find yourself type journey. And he goes into other video games and whatnot. And basically what he says, it reminded him a lot of Toy Story, where you have a lot of the old familiar toys that we love. You know, you have the dog with the Slinky dog, and you have the That's a Sketch and all these other things. And everyone who's had cowboy toys or whatnot, Mr. Potato Head, but also with the new toys, with, you know, Buzz Lightyear and whatnot, and how you grow to love both. And it's very much with this. I mean, there's so many references of video games. You got Bowser, you have Sonic, you have
Zangief from Street Fighter.
I mean, the fact is, like, you bad guy, but you're not bad guy. You know, I mean, to see Zangief do that, and to show all these references, these classic video games that we've all grown and loved. It had a very familiar feel to that. But also, you know, this was, as Darren mentioned, this is definitely, in his mind, it was right up there with all those Pixar classics, you know, a Toy Story, just in terms of the emotion, the feel, and you know, very much of a, you know, there's that witty dialogue, the quality of the animation, you know, the tapping the real reasons why generations of fans, you know, why we love video games. And but also real human emotions being to the true center and focal point of this film, which is interesting because, again, that's what made Toy Story so fascinating, was, yeah, these toys had these real characters, real emotions, who just wanted to be loved and wanted to be accepted and you know, by Andy at the time. And same thing with this. And you also see a lot of John Lasseter's hand and guidance in this film. John Lasseter is the one who created Toy Story, and a lot of the Pixar greats. And also, you know, you see a lot of, it said, you know, there are a lot of references and tributes to the games that gamers will love. It said you even see the Mario Brothers, the Street Fighter. You know, you see that the corny dialogue of the gunning down the aliens, you know, specialists that, you know, Wreck-It Ralph was given when he's in that, you know, kind of that Halo-type video game that you see in all those first-person shooter games. But he says, you know, there's never a generic or corny theme that's played out, but it's very real, heartfelt, sincere. Very much the way Pixar does it. And he said, you know, this is not just a tribute to gamers, but it's a very heartfelt and charismatic tale about two people wanting to break away from who people say they are and find their places in life. You see that again with Wreck-It Ralph, as well as the girl who's the glitch in that Candyland type game.
Yes.
You know, she just wants to be loved and accepted. Ventilope. And Wreck-It Ralph and Ventilope's friendship. And so basically, he says, you know, after watching this, and like watching Toy Story, and you look at the toy again, after watching this, you may never look at a video game again, because, you know, you hope that when the lights are off and when you're asleep, your favorite video game characters are living their wonderful world behind a big plastic screen. And so when I asked Darren about whether, you know, see it, skip it, or stream it, he said, you got to see it. I mean, he said it's basically one of the best movies that, you know, it's that Disney or Pixar has ever done. Even though this isn't a Pixar film, Pixar is very much, again, as we talked about earlier, tied with Disney. So it is right up there as one of the greats. And he said even the short before it, they have an animated short, and he said it's the best he's seen, even, you know, better than both Pixar's have done. So, you know, it is a movie. I said after leaving that review and talking to Darren about it, and also the reviews in general, it's gotten great reviews. So it would, and especially as a video game fan, it's definitely one, you know, it's one you got to see.
Now, I was weary about this from the beginning. I didn't have much interest. Then I saw John C. Reilly was in it, and it got me excited. I'm a big fan of
his. I love John C. Reilly.
And then lost interest, and then then I saw Sarah Silverman was in it, and I'm not a big fan. So that I didn't like. And then I saw the 8-bit trailers that they were doing for it, and they were fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
So at that point, it just got better and better and better. So,
well, I mean, again, when you see there when Wreck-It Ralph doesn't want to be a villain anymore, and you see Bowser freak out, and like the
super villain support group.
Yeah, I mean, that right there is just, it really, for me, it's basically a new version of Toy Story, but video games. Because, I mean, kids don't play with toys very much anymore. I mean, they're going to play video games now.
Yep.
I mean, whenever I visit my nephews or whatnot, you know, they don't have their toys along. They want to play in little iPads or iPhone, you know, mobile stuff. So again, this is a movie you got to see. Moving on now to couple weeks ago, we talked about Arrow and reviewed that. And so what we wanted to do, you know, our end of the day review of it was, this is something that has potential. Is this something, you know, maybe... Yeah,
give it a couple more episodes, see how it works out. So it's now finished its fourth episode. It'll be airing its fifth tomorrow night.
Yep.
Well, I guess tonight by the time this is posted. Wednesday night. And after four episodes, I like this show in spite of this show.
What do you mean by that?
See, that I find myself incredibly drawn in. I'm liking all the characters. I'm liking the story as a whole. But everything about this show is cliche.
Mm-hmm.
All the characters are more of caricatures than they are actual characters. Like, no one has any real depth of emotion. They have their superficial struggle, but you're not really drawn into it at that aspect. But it's fun watching them beat up bad guys, watching them shoot people with arrows.
And just seeing, you know, you saw Deadshot last episode. I think Deathstroke's coming in this episode.
Yeah, the Huntress as well.
Huntress is coming in.
Which, personally, I think this is where you run into trouble with some of these TV shows, is Deadshot, though I thought he was a cool character even in the show, they pretty, mostly faithfully recreated his costume from the comics into the show with little updates, and to me it just didn't play quite as well on TV as it does on page. The giant headgear thing he had going on was just more distracting and looked more awkward than it did practical.
Deathstroke, who, you know, he's going to look very much like his comic book character. He's not going to be changed at all. He's still got the different masks and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. I think they're going to have to find a way to kind of update these to make them fit more into their real world scenario, with still staying true to the original comic.
But, you know, I got to say, I mean, because it's funny because, you know, my wife, you know, she's not a big fan of the comic books, all that stuff. But, you know, she watched the show with me. She loves the show. And I asked her, what do you think? She's like, well, it's a lot like Batman Begins meets Revenge, which is, I think, the show on CBS or ABC about the late, you know, the girl who comes back and takes revenge for what people did to her family. And, you know, they said the acting is a little stiff and whatnot. But I've noticed very few TV shows are able to go into a lot of character development anyway. I mean, I think of all these great, like, I love Person of Interest, but the characters are still very stiff.
Yeah.
You know, I think Walking Dead is one of the few shows on right now that really dives into, you know, the emotion or goes into a lot of character development.
Well, that's where it has the advantage. I mean, with the exception of, I mean, yes, they're in a zombie world, but it's very much a character piece. It's about personages like that and Mad Men and a show like that are character pieces set in different worlds, more or less.
Yeah, but again, those are on cable television and whatnot. That's what you kind of go for. But most of these just kind of basic shows,
it's an action TV show, so you have just enough story to keep the action going.
Yeah.
But it's good. I mean, that's in spite of itself, I enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, I look forward to. I mean, it's the one show that's on right now that I look forward to watching every single week.
Yeah.
There's other shows as well, but it's one of the few on my list. That I look forward to watching. So I would say right now, again, despite its flaws, despite and whatnot, I would recommend watching it, seeing it.
And it's important to note that it's getting better every episode.
Oh yeah, I mean you watch episode 2 and episode 4, a complete difference.
Complete different. The story's better. Which I don't want to be spoilerific, so I'm not going to go into details about what happened in episode 4. But there were some events that took place that just kind of left me rolling my eyes a little bit.
Well, now you have to divulge what you're talking about.
All right, this is potential spoiler. If you have not seen episode 4, you may want to press pause for a minute. But when he pulls his uniform out of the trash to go find Deadshot.
Yeah.
Or I guess that was episode 3 that he did it, and it followed up in episode 4.
When he noticed it.
It's like, so he's this smart. You know, he's got all this stuff planned out, yet he makes a rookie mistake, like not looking to see if there's a camera in the stairwell before doing this. So, you know, it's potential that he set that up on purpose.
Yeah.
To kind of clear himself so that now he won't be suspected later on. Plus, I'm also left with the wondering if he's this, like, how? He was a playboy, you know, dropped out of several schools, sat on an island for 5 years, and yet now somehow fluent in forensics and all of these things.
But I think that's the reason, though, because the island, that's how we don't know what happened on there. Because again, you look at the foreshadow of episode 5, you notice that Deathstroke seems to be present, and there seems to be a much bigger some type of presence on the island, military, yes, whatnot. And that's interesting because in Green Arrow Year 1, that's how Green Arrow becomes Green Arrow, is by being stranded on an island and taking down a drug lord, I think it is.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but some type of drug lord or something that goes on the island, criminal organization. So I think they're going to play into that, into this episode, into the series. I think the island, we're going to learn how he gains those skills.
Yeah, which threw me off at first when you started seeing other people on the island.
Yeah.
You know, you expect him to be solo, kind of a Robinson Crusoe deal.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden people start showing up on the island, some good, some apparently bad.
Yeah.
So
seems like he has his little mentor, this Chinese guy who shoots him as well. So, but yeah, I think that's the thing, is episode 4, that's what made me realize, okay, I really want to know what's going on here.
Yes.
And that, him getting caught and leading up, and as you pointed out, was that on purpose? Because it seemed like, because the same thing happened to me. It's like, really? You make a mistake like that?
It's a rookie mistake.
Yeah. I mean, come on. So, but yeah, I would say it's definitely a see it.
Yeah. We're done with spoilers. I say see it. It's worth following out at least through the rest of the season. But by the time we get there, I have the feeling the show is going to be good enough that you'll want to keep going.
Exactly. So, well, that ends up for our review section. And now we'll be talking about From the Vault. We got a special movie for you guys. Check it out.
All right, welcome back to our Between the Vault section. Now, this is a special, special Between the Vault. In honor of LucasArts and Star Wars being sold to Disney and the announcement of the 3 new films, we are going to review... You're wrong. We're not going to review the original Star Wars. We're going to review...
that's a classic already.
Exactly. I mean, you already know what we're going to say about that, especially if you listen to the first half. We are going to review the Star Wars Holiday Special.
I know. It's not Christmas yet, or Hanukkah, or Kwanzaa. But because of this news, we just got to talk about it. Even for those people who aren't even aware of what we're talking about. Casey, what is this?
All right, this was made in 1978, which is put it between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back. And this is a holiday special that CBS did involving the Star Wars characters, specifically Chewbacca's wife, father, and child, son.
Itchy. Lumpy. What's his wife's name again? I wish I remember that.
Nala? Mala?
Mala, I think it is.
Yes. This was proof positive in the beginning that George Lucas had no shame in what he was willing to do with Star Wars.
Wasn't really involved with this, though, was he?
He wasn't. This was more of a CBS thing. So it just shows the depth of depravity, I guess, of mankind that someone would think this is a good idea.
I mean, there's musicals in this. I mean...
You got B. Arthur.
Yeah.
Jefferson Starship.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just... It is basically almost a variety show in the Star Wars universe than it is Star Wars.
Yes.
And yet, it's kind of canon.
It's true. Talk more about this being canon.
So, supposedly, I guess, I mean, And that's the thing is basically you have Han Solo and Chewbacca who are trying to say go back to visit Chewie's family Life Day, I think it is.
Yes,
for Life Day, for a holiday on Kashyyyk, which is their Chewbacca's
the home planet.
Yeah, and it's shown in episode 3. And so you know Han Solo and Chewbacca get running with the rebels, and then you have them the family trying to talk to different Star Wars people to figure out where Han and Chewie are. And then you have the Empire come and go to their house because they're trying to look for the Rebel base. And in between all this, you have these little song numbers and all these different things. And you have a cartoon where Boba Fett's actually introduced.
That's right. Believe it or not, Empire Strikes Back, not the first time Boba Fett is seen.
Yeah.
It's during this holiday special.
Yeah, in a cartoon thing that I think Lumpy watches.
Yes.
So, but the reason why some of this is canon is because some of this, basically, there's C canon and S canon. C canon is if events from this show have made it into the Star Wars, you know, books or video games or whatever, then it's part of canon. So Chewbacca's family, as well as the holiday itself.
Yeah, the Life Day.
Yeah. And then if it's S canon is, well, it could have happened, but it hasn't been referenced anywhere else in any other novelization. So that's the thing, though, is that basically nowhere else is Chewbacca's family mentioned, so he's basically kind of a deadbeat dad. Yes, I know he has a life debt to Han Solo, but he never talks about his family or any reference to his family anywhere else.
And he never goes home, with the exception of the holiday special.
So basically, you know, his father and his wife and his son are basically forgotten by Chewbacca, except for on Life Day.
That's right.
So, but it is so bad. It is so bad. I mean, at the very end, all the Wookiees show up in front of Princess Leia on Life Day, and she sings a Life Day celebration song under the melody of the Star Wars theme. And it is so bad. I mean, I can't even watch this. It's not so bad it's good. It's just bad.
It's just bad. I mean, you get you have Mark Hamill make an appearance, Carrie Fisher, several of your Star Wars regulars.
Yeah.
It's painful. You can find the whole thing on YouTube, broken up in segments. I'd seen parts before, but I decided this time I was going to watch the whole thing. I watched about the first 10 minutes religiously, all the way through. And I started skipping every couple minutes and watching for a minute. And after about 20, I was done.
Yeah.
It was painful. I could not continue anymore.
It's so awful. I mean, and that's the funny thing, too, is as you pointed out. Well, tell us what George Lucas thinks about this.
Oh, it's so bad that George Lucas actually, apparently, according to one story I read, every year will buy up copies on eBay or wherever he can find them just so he can destroy them and try to put it out of existence.
Exactly. Which, now with the internet, it's almost impossible.
That's right. And until he buys YouTube with his $4 billion that he sold Star Wars for.
Well, that's something really cool as well. Side note, but George Lucas actually donated most of the $4 billion to education, I think.
Yes, which is fantastic.
So we know we need that in America. I mean that sincerely, not sarcastically. But the other thing, too, is Harrison Ford... I can't remember if it was Conan O'Brien or Jimmy Fallon or something like that, but he was a guest. I think it was for Cowboys and Aliens, or maybe it was for Morning Glory, one of those more recent movies. But they showed a segment where he saves Chewbacca's family from Imperial trooper or Star Trooper stormtroopers by throwing them off, you know, the treehouse. And then he comes back and, you know, basically says, "It's okay, Lumpy," or something like that. And Harrison Ford was so mad, you know, the fact that he was shown this clip, because it's such an awful – I mean, it's Harrison Ford's acting at its best. So everyone's embarrassed of this show. It's a travesty.
Well, and the worst part is it's got such high hopes at the very beginning.
Yeah.
When it first started, you know, it's got Chewbacca and Han Solo in the Millennium Falcon, and they're shooting at TIE Fighters and
– Star Destroyers chasing them. And
so exciting. So awesome. And then they jet through hyperspace, and then you go to Chewbacca's house.
Yeah.
And it's all downhill from there.
It's basically what the Ewok – I mean the quality of the costumes are what you see from the Ewok specials. Anyone's ever seen those at all? That should be good from the vault.
I actually own those, so we can watch
serious?
Those. Oh, yeah, both of them.
The Ewok Adventures?
Ewok Adventures and Battle for Endor.
Oh, with the giant spider and the
yes.
Like monster beast thing. Wow. That's incredible.
That's my embarrassing announcement for the day. Yes, I own those, and I have watched them within the past year.
Wow. That is pretty incredible.
I know, right?
Well, I think I don't want to go anymore, but again, if it's on YouTube, this isn't even a stream it or anything, but if you just are dying to watch this.
watch 5 minutes so you know it exists, and then skip it.
Yeah. There's nothing of value in this at all. So, well, that's it for us this week. So tune in next week as we give you more news and reviews as well as our From the Vault. Happy listening.
Thank you for joining us in this episode of Between the Reels. As always, we are produced under Creative Commons license. Our bumper music is provided by Kevin MacLeod.
Make sure to like us on Facebook at Between the Reels Podcast and follow us on Twitter at BTWN Reels. See you next time.